Merkel Media.
And you know what took him down was the knees to the nuts and the punches in the stomach.
That'll do
it. Later Beavis, and then later Beavis is going, "Hey, did you guys see the way I choked him out?"
He put it in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I'm your host, Tony Merkel.
And I'm Methuselah Honeysuckle.
And we're really glad you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. Dad, we have a voicemail line. What is that all about?
That voicemail line is all about you contacting us, leaving a voicemail, 5-10 minutes tops. Don't go longer than that. If you're going longer than that, get a hold of us through the website.
Yes.
Come on the show and have a conversation. But if you do have a short story and you want to call and talk to us about it and just kind of have a voicemail, it's 515-585-MERK. That's 515-585-6375.
Leave those voicemails and we will get to them on the next voicemail show. We also offer emergency preparedness food. That's preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com. And there you can get yourself emergency preparedness food for any kind of emergency out on the road. Next week, you're going to hear an interview with a returning guest named Tom, and he has been through several tornadoes. And in those kind of emergencies, you want to make sure you're good to go in case you're stranded somewhere. So prepare with HLL.com. And, Dad, can people buy us coffees?
They certainly can. They can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Hammer Lane.
That's right. Buymeacoffee.com/Hammer Lane. You can buy us a coffee, keep us caffeinated, and we greatly appreciate that.
Yes, we do. And Amy, thank you so much for buying us a coffee. That was awesome. I appreciated that.
Absolutely. So this week we have Pete coming on the show, and Pete never drove truck, but he was a police officer, and he has some great stories. I know people are going to love this. You loved it, right, Dad?
I loved it. It was great talking with him.
Yeah. So let's get to Pete right now. All right, today we got Pete on the show. Pete, man, long time no talk.
Yeah, hey, Tony. How are you doing?
doing good.
How are you doing, Pete? It's nice to talk to you. I'm waiting for Tony's looking at me like, go ahead, Dad.
I'm trying to change some routines here, you know? Like, I don't want the shtick to get too old. So,
I'm hanging in there like a hair on a biscuit.
Awesome.
Wonderful. So, Pete, just to let the audience know, you and I recorded for the other show, and that will air down the road and stuff, but we're getting you on Hammer Lane because you were a police officer, now retired from the law enforcement, and you have several stories to share with us, and we're going to jump a little bit all over the place, but we're, like you said, the first thing we're going to start out with, you're almost the butt of the joke on that one, so we'll start out there because you can only go up from there, you know? So let's start out with the cattle truck.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to let your listeners know that I actually met you in person, me and my boys did, back in May of 2019 in Houston.
Yeah.
But at the time, I didn't know this. The one I really wanted to meet was Methuselah Honeysuckle.
He's not on today. I'm sorry. I don't know where he's at.
Oh, he's gone?
It's his week off. Who knows? Maybe he'll show up later.
Maybe. Maybe. I think that you're primed for an appearance.
I think he is.
Yeah. Well, just to give you a little background real quick, I'm from the Odessa Midland area, and we have a friendly rivalry. It's oil country. And all your truckers that drive down Interstate 20 know that we're 5 miles from, 5 hours from El Paso and 5 hours from Dallas. So we're right there. If you look at a map of Texas, we're right there at the armpit of Texas. And being oil field country, you got booms and you got busts. Uh-huh. We've had several over the years. And I'm from Odessa. In 84, we were the murder capital of America.
Wow.
Per capita. Mm-hmm. And that's because we had an oil boom coming in, and everybody comes in from everywhere. You get the good with the bad. But just to put it into perspective, it's always been said that Midland will break your spirit, Odessa will break your jaw.
Wonderful.
They also
wonderful.
I think I can avoid both.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they also say you go to Midland to raise a family and you go to Odessa to raise hell. And I worked the rougher of the two towns. I was born and raised there.
Okay.
And a lot of people from this area, when you want a recreation, it's flat and desolate. I call it Odessolation, but you go to Ruidoso, New Mexico, because it's up in the mountains. There's trees. Ruidoso in Spanish means ruidoso, which means noisy. I was told that the Spaniards found a noisy river there. But people go there because the Mescalero Apaches have a casino there. They have skiing in the winter. In the summer, they have horse racing. So that's where a lot of people from this area go for recreation. So a friend of mine and his wife were headed up there to meet some other people. As a matter of fact, there was a group of us going up there to meet the city prosecutor at the time. Her grandma owned a 3-story cabin up in the mountains, so we were going to go hang out there. And so what happened with this cattle truck is, any of your truckers that know this, whether you're crossing from New Mexico to Texas or Texas to New Mexico, you know, as soon as you cross that state line, if you're leaving Texas, you leave smooth roads, wide shoulders, and it goes to crappy roads and thump thump with no shoulders and bump bump. And so it's a one lane going and one lane coming. And we're just going down the road shooting the breeze. We're headed towards Roswell, the famous one where the UFO crashed, because Ruidoso is about somewhere between 60 and 80 miles west of that. So we crossed over, and I remember one of the signs I saw said Bottomless Lake State Park. So we're somewhere near there. I can't tell you exactly what highway we were on. I tried looking it up on the map. I couldn't find it. So there's a cattle truck coming against us. We're going that way. We're shooting the breeze. We're not even paying attention. All of a sudden, something smacks the windshield. And it's like, it was a cow had taken a dump out the side, apparently, which this story, when you said that, somebody came on and said a cow took a dump on a trooper one time on the side.
Yep.
That reminded me of this because it hit my windshield so hard. It scared the crap out of us. And it was wet and clumpy. And we didn't even know what had happened. We didn't know if we'd crashed or what, because we weren't paying attention. So I go to turn the wiper on, and the crap had taken my driver's side wiper clean off the window. Wow. It's gone.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It was metal. Just the metal arm was scraping on my window.
Wow.
So I pull over real quick because we can't see nothing. I mean, mm-hmm. There's clumps. It's wet clumps. We pull over real quick, and there's no shoulder, by the way. But so we pull over, and I always carried window cleaner and paper towels with me. So we were able to clean it good enough just to get back on the road. And I ended up wrapping a T-shirt around the metal arm just so it wouldn't scrape my glass. And so we continued back towards Roswell and Ruidoso, and everything was fine. It got dark. The window was clean. The skies were clear. There was stars out. Right outside of Ruidoso, we start climbing elevation to get up in the mountains. And anybody coming in from the west side can spot this sign. It either says Ruidoso 7 miles or 8 miles. It's 7 or 8 miles away. As soon as we saw that sign, it went from dry road till the snow started. But there was snow on the ground. And we weren't expecting that. We're from the desert. We're not used to snow.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was wintertime, that's a higher elevation. It hardly ever snows out there anyway. So we start climbing, and then the snow starts dropping, and it starts getting thicker. And I can't even see the lane to see if I'm in the right lane or not. And then my friend's wife starts screaming in my ear in the back seat. Because there was cliffs and guardrails. Some parts had guardrails and some didn't. But you couldn't really see the road either because there was so much snow cover. And look at that. My truck was a 4x4. So I pop it into 4x4. The whole time she's screaming bloody murder in my ear. She was irritating me. I was already nervous. I'm gritting my teeth. My friend's telling her to be quiet. She won't listen. She says she can't help it. So he tells her to close her eyes and lay down in the seat. And then she goes, I can't. And then she just keeps screaming. I mean, the kind of screams you hear on a movie, like a horror movie. Those loud, piercing ear-piercing screams. What should have been like a 20 or 30 minute drive ended up taking like an hour and a half, 2 hours to finally make it. So where I really ended up being the butt of this joke is I get back to work the next week and I'm telling a group of officers outside what had happened. And there was this one officer there that we all considered to be a complete idiot. And he said, why didn't you take the good wiper off the passenger side and put it on the driver's side? It was silence. And I was looking at him and I was thinking, I'm the idiot. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we all thought he was an idiot. I was the idiot because he was right. Why didn't I think of that crap?
Well, it wasn't just you. I mean, you had other people in the car with you.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't think about it either.
Right. That's what I mean.
Hey, I'll tell you what. They had some auto parts store the next day. I went up there. That T-shirt was so frozen, I had to cut it off with a knife because it wouldn't come off. And I put my new wiper on, and I bought extras. And ever since then, I've carried extra wipers in my toolbox.
That's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
I don't think I've ever really thought about doing something like that.
I do.
Do you?
Uh-huh. Wait, I have extra wipers in my trunk.
Oh.
Just in case.
Yes, good idea.
Well, I'll tell you what. That is awesome. Yep. It comes with experience, man.
Yes, it does.
How you learn the hard way.
Yes, it does. I had an experience where I had in my tractor, the roof was filled with ice, and I came, and it was starting to warm up. And I came to a stop, and all the ice came crashing down and off the fairing on the front, destroyed the wipers. And you know what that taught me? Keep spares.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I threw them in the car. I threw them in. Yeah. So I'm ready. If it happens, yeah. I threw them in the truck, threw them in the car.
The worst case, the worst feeling is when you have snow or even rain and you have your wipers on, it's just smearing the water. It's not wiping it away. It's I can't see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that part. That T-shirt didn't clean crap. The
I'm
T-shirt
sure.
on the wiper, you couldn't clean crap.
Figuratively or literally.
Well, yeah. That,
no matter that how you right. look at it, yeah.
I started going to the store looking for crap wipers.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I've never been a trucker. But I had two uncles on my mom's side that were, and one uncle on my dad's side that was. And so I grew up around truckers.
Amen, brother.
So I apologize for not being a trucker, but I do remember I've been with you guys since the beginning. And I do remember on one of the early shows when Tony put the call out, he did mention cops. And I noticed you've had a couple of cops on before.
Yes, sir.
So hopefully I've got some stories that are either entertaining or your listeners might at least find interesting. And I'll tell you one. This is a short, quick one. When I was a sergeant on one of the shifts, I had this young go-getter rookie guy. He comes in at the end of the shift. He's so happy. He's turning in a stack of reports and tickets, arrests. And there's this old, lazy, crusty veteran sitting in the corner. And if that didn't indicate anything, he was the first one in there waiting to leave. Here comes the go-getter turning in all his stuff. It kind of reminded me in my younger days, but instead of leaving it alone, the crusty veteran goes, now, mind you, this young guy's 21 or 22. He goes, yeah, I remember when I was 16, I used to be a go-getter too. we started laughing because I seriously doubt he was ever a go-getter if you knew this guy. And that rookie guy, which, by the way, he's now a Texas Ranger, but at the time he's a rookie officer in Odessa. And he goes, well, let's see here. Back then on our shift, we had two lists that we would leave out in public on the bulletin board. One was a shift seniority list showing what time you or what date you came onto the shift. And the reason that was there is, like, let's say someone left for some reason, whether they got transferred or whatever, the next person on the list would be up to get those better days off and stuff. Everything went off that list. The other list was a list of stats. It would show how many reports you took the year before, how many accidents you worked, how many tickets you wrote, how many DWIs you arrested. So that rookie walks over there and grabs that list. And he goes, let's see here. He goes, oh, let's see. Last year I had 26 DWI arrests. He goes, and I wasn't even here all of last year. I had just started. And then he goes, oh, let's see. Where are you at? Oh, he starts laughing. He goes, you had one DWI arrest. And he goes, yeah, but he really needed to go. In other words, if he hadn't been that messed up, he wouldn't even have had
He wouldn't have had one.
He's like, yeah, but he really needed to go.
So he definitely wasn't a go-getter anymore.
Not anymore. I doubt ever.
That's funny.
That is funny.
Yep.
That's
well,
awesome.
Let me tell you about my little brother real quick. Both my little brothers ended up becoming cops there in Odessa after I'd been there about 10 years. And I wasn't there the night this happened, but I was already up in detectives. And my youngest brother, Philip, told me he was working one night. And anyone that's ever worked in Odessa knows it's always busy, but Fridays and Saturdays, it's call to call to call. And he really needed to relieve himself real bad, but there wasn't time to get to stop anywhere. So what he decided to do was black out his unit, turn out his lights, and roll down an industrial area, not a residential, because he was just going to stop in an alley and relieve himself and didn't want anybody to see him. So he blacked the car out, and it was a part of town that just had businesses. And he rolls down the alley, and it was pitch dark. And he got out, and he said he started relieving himself by a dumpster. And out of the darkness, all of a sudden, he hears, hey, thanks a lot there, buddy. He said, oh, crap. He jumped back. Apparently, there was a guy laying there that he had never seen.
Aye.
He was sleeping there. He relieved himself on him. He got scared and jumped back, and he said he got started. He said, oh, sorry, and jumped back in the car and took off.
Jeez.
Apparently, there was a transient laying there that he never saw and accidentally peed on him.
Wow.
That's a wake-up call.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Do you think he felt bad or more embarrassed over that one?
I think he felt bad and embarrassed.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's probably both.
Well, he felt bad. He felt bad because that's not something he would ever intentionally do. And he felt embarrassed because he thought he'd picked the perfect spot and it wasn't.
Clearly.
I mean, he was looking. At least he tried.
He tried.
Well, yeah. Well, not to mention it startled the crap out of him. But
oh, my word. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
might I suggest a new strategy for him? Just get pee bottles and throw them on the side of the road like truckers do.
Yeah, funny you mentioned that. I heard that before. I didn't know. You know, it's funny. Your show, as far as your show goes, just when I think I've seen it all and heard it all, I'll end up hearing something on your show that I would have never known.
Yep.
Like, I found out what tangerines and tube socks mean.
That was a funny one.
Well, it was, but you know what the most important one probably was?
What's that?
I always wondered why the windshield cleaning station stunk so bad by the gas pump. I don't know.
Yeah, now we're all leery.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. I'll just bring my own squeegee.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I went to go wash my windows at the gas station the other day, and I thought twice. I took it to a car wash, washed the whole thing.
Safety first.
Yeah. I believe it. I'll tell you, the world's worst at using that thing, that windshield cleaning station, was my wife. I let her hear that clip, and she even quit using them now.
Yep.
That's enough of that.
Yeah.
Well,
let me tell you one about back in 98. I was in my mid-20s, and I was a field training officer on patrol. And I had the field training sergeant assign this guy to me that was 49 years old. He was a native of Odessa, just like I was. But he had just washed out of the DPS Academy for the state troopers. And the reason was, he was in excellent physical condition. He could run with the best of them, sit-ups, push-ups. But the reason he got washed out, I didn't know this till I started training him, is because he had refused to fight at the DPS Academy. When they pulled the mats out and the boxing gloves and stuff,
mm-hmm.
he just flat out refused to fight. So, you know, as a cop, sometimes you're going to have to fight. People want to fight the cops. Sometimes they get drunk or high, or they're just angry. They want to fight the cops. You're going to have to fight. Well, DPS wasn't going to have none of it. He flat out refused, told me he wasn't going to do it. So they told him to pack his bags and get gone. So next thing you know, he applies with us. We hire him. And some of the other training officers were flunking him. So the sergeant put him with me. He said, just give him a fair shake, evaluate him. And I found out, and I was talking to him, and I asked him, you know, what his goals or plans were. He told me he didn't plan to work a day past 55.
Wow.
So I was thinking, that's 6 years away.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, that's not even enough for retirement. Why are you wasting my time? Well, and yours. But that was his plan. So. This guy, I'll tell you what the main issue was. He could not find his way around town. And he was a native to Odessa, just like I was. Born and raised there. And here's the thing. This was back before we had GPS. And so they would give you this little booklet called a street locator. You didn't have to know all the streets in Odessa. All you had to know was the major street. And that street locator would help you find any street in Odessa. And they're in alphabetical order. And what it would tell you is like two blocks south of this major street and six blocks west of this major street. So that's what we used back then. And this guy, it didn't matter where we got the call. It would seem like he headed in the opposite direction. This was getting frustrating for me because I'm supposed to be training him. And I remember the one time that, at one point, I was on his butt so much that he finally told me, he goes, you make me nervous. Just let me look it up and get there and I'll be fine. I said, okay, we'll do it. And I remember one time we were at the red light at 8th and West County Road. We got a call a block behind us at 9th and West County Road. And he started, and this is on the west side of town. He made a left turn and started headed towards the east side of town. And the call was one block behind us when we got it. And this is without me telling him anything, because he said I made him nervous. So we get about four blocks, and that's as much as I can take because we're continuing towards the east side of town. And I'm thinking the car's behind us. It was behind us when we got it. So, of course, you know, I go off on him, and now I have to tell him where to turn and where it's at. And so I'm marking him down steadily every day, and then I'm working with him in between calls. I'll make up an address and have him look for it. I'm trying to work with the guy, right? Well, the final straw that broke the camel's back was we got a call one time on the east side, and we're driving in front of the people that called us, and they're in the front yard waving their arms, jumping up and down, and we're going right by them, and I'm in the passenger side, and I'm looking right at them, so we look like idiots going by them. Because he's staring straight ahead and goes right by them. These people are waving. So we get to the end of the block. Oh, man, I was so mad. I went off on him. I said, did you not see those people? I mean, he was just staring straight ahead. And I was thinking, this is not going to cut it. There's a couple issues. So, I go back to the sergeant. And, you know, back then, five was great. One was poor. And you had all the other ratings in between. But off past one, you had one called NRT. It stood for not responding to training. When you get those in training, now you're in danger of getting gone. So I finally gave him an NRT. I said, and then the field training sergeant, he tells me, what's this NRT? So I told him, I said, Sarge, I said, this guy cannot find his own ass with both hands and a flashlight. He's going to get someone hurt. Either the people calling in or one of us. And he tells me, he goes, does he get there eventually?
Jeez.
I said, well, yes, sir. He gets there eventually. I said, but that's really not the point. He goes, well, if he gets there eventually, he said, we're not going to cut him for that. Okay. Oh, so he ended up changing it, right? Now, mind you, this was the field training sergeant that said that.
Mm-hmm.
So you fast forward maybe a year around there or so. It was a couple years, 2 years. At this point, I'm up in detectives. That sergeant became the lieutenant over that same shift. They left him there. And one weekend, I'm working off duty at the Whataburger on 8th Street. And I, of course, I'm listening to the radio to hear the calls going out. And I hear that same guy that I tried to cut, that he didn't want to cut. And he gets sent to a major disturbance at an apartment complex north of town. And he was about five or six blocks away from the call. And when we worked Whataburger, we always worked with a state trooper. It was always a state trooper and one of us, city cops.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're listening, and we heard that go out. And I told him, this guy's going to go the wrong way, watch. And then he goes, really? I said, yeah. And then I told him the whole story. And it was a major disturbance. It was a big disturbance. And so we were so busy that weekend that they needed officers to back him up, and they couldn't find any. So you hear the lieutenant go in service from downtown at the station to go back him up. And I told that trooper, I said, watch this. I said, that lieutenant's going to beat him there, even though he's coming from further away. And sure enough, the lieutenant ends up getting there, and then you don't hear anything for a little while. And then a few minutes later, the lieutenant comes on. He sounds panicked. You can hear a bunch of screaming in the background. And he's like, headquarters, do you have any other units coming over here? And they're like, 10-4, we've got so-and-so en route. Well, have them step it up. And so all the other officers that were finishing up calls or whatever heard that. So the next thing you know, they start going back in service off their calls, and they haul Bud over there. They end up backing up the lieutenant. And then I hear a friend of mine that was a sergeant now on that shift. He goes over there, and a little while later, we're there at the Whataburger, and that sergeant pulls up, and he is laughing. And he said, the lieutenant is pissed. He wants me to get a piece of so-and-so's ass because he never showed up. And not only did he beat him there, but all the other officers beat him there too. And I said, did you tell him, did he get there eventually? And he said, no. He said, no, what are you talking about? So I told him the whole story. I said, well, he's the one that said he's okay as long as he gets there eventually, right? Well, this, in this case, it was his own butt.
Yes, it was. Wow.
So that's what I call negligent retention. Yeah. You know, negligent retention is when you keep someone that you know you shouldn't have kept.
Amen, brother.
I take it, you know, for example, in the trucking business, it would probably be somebody that's a really bad driver, but you don't get rid of them.
Yep.
They keep getting in wrecks. That's negligent retention, because at the point that he ends up going and getting in a wreck and hurting somebody, then they go back and look at all these incidents and you kept him instead of firing him. That's negligent retention. Then
yes,
you get your butt suit on.
Yes,
it's that vicarious that vicarious liability.
Yes, sir. I mean, I've seen guys not be able to find their way. I mean, you know, where I'm at, they even give us directions how to, you know, for line haul, they give you directions to the terminals. And I've seen guys not be able to find a terminal or drive past or not, you know, it's like, wow, you know, you need to step it up. Because that is, yeah, negligent retention is that's exactly right.
Yeah, but the thing is, if somebody's calling for help.
Oh, my word. Yeah, that's a thing that's like, holy crap, you can't not show up.
Yeah, you especially can't drive right by them either and look and keep going.
You see them bouncing around in their yard trying to get your attention, and you ain't paying attention. Wow.
Yeah, and we're supposed to be trained observers.
Right.
Look around stuff, you know.
He's trained something.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. That's crazy.
We, when I first started our old Motorolas, when somebody would say something stupid or do something stupid, and they, over the radio, the officer would click the mic.
Mm-hmm.
Just click, 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 click. Everybody would start clicking. Well, that used to piss off the sergeants and the lieutenant, because they could never figure out who was doing it. And, so it was funny that one time we had, back then we had the guy in charge, the range master, the one that the firearms instructor, he was called the range master. Back then they actually used to live on property there at the range. So one weekend, and he was a sergeant, then this old crusty sergeant, he pulls up in his car, and that range master steps out on the front porch and he's looking at him. Well, this sergeant picks up the microphone, but instead of grabbing the PA system, the external mic for the PA system, he actually picked up the main radio that everyone hears, including dispatch and every officer. And he keys up and he goes, "Come on out with your hands up, you son of a bitch. We've got the house surrounded." And that sergeant's got his hands in his pocket, and he's just staring at him because he didn't hear anything, because he didn't hit the PA, the public address system. And then dispatch comes on, calls him by his number, and goes, 302, do you have traffic? Do you need backup? Negative, of course, accidental. So of course, all the clicking starts. Everyone starts clicking. And what was funny about that, which wasn't funny, I guess I've always been kind of a smartass. we were in briefing, and the lieutenant and the sergeant said, "Y'all need to knock off all that clicking." They said, "You're somebody might be trying to call for help. You're going to end up covering them, and then we're not going to be able to hear them." And they were really mad because they didn't like it, but you couldn't ever tell who it was. And I raised my hand. Of course, I'm a young rookie, and I said, "I know how you could figure out who did it." And they go, "How's that?" I said, "Just dust the microphone for thumbprint." And they stared at me, and they did not think that was funny.
Yeah. No sense of humor.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah, I was being a smartass, but I was actually being truthful. In other words, we're all doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not one guy.
No, it's not one guy doing it. Yeah, they're like, "Whoever's doing that better knock it off." Well, I was thinking, everybody does it.
Yeah.
But you know what brought that to an end is in 96, we got a new radio system. you keyed up the mic, whether it's in the car or your portable. And at that point, it would show who it was. It would have your call number.
Not good.
And let me tell you something. That clicking came to a cold turkey stop.
I bet. Yeah.
That's what finally brought an end to the clicking with new Motorolas in 96.
Technology, it sucks.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just ruins all the fun.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. When we first got cameras, we didn't like cameras.
Oh, I bet.
And, you know, now they're digital. But back then, they were the big old square VHS tape in the trunk. And we all hated it. We all thought, it's Big Brother looking over our shoulder. They just want to watch us, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at one point I heard something that made sense. They said, if you're not doing nothing wrong, you ain't got nothing to worry about.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. What finally changed my way of thinking is I pulled a lady over one time. And I wrote her a ticket or two. And she had two little kids in the back seat of the car. And I wrote her a ticket. You know, like if they had like 3 to 5 violations, I might write one or two. I wouldn't stick it to them. And I wrote the lady the ticket. This is when we first got the cameras. And then I cut her loose. I'm still filling out the probable cause statement on the back of the citation. And I haven't even checked back in service yet. I get a call from the sergeant, tells me to come to the office and meet him. And he tells me to bring my VHS tape in. So I was thinking, what the heck? So I gave him my tape and I asked him what's going on. He goes, I'll let you know. So I didn't hear anything. He gave me a new blank tape to put in there. At the end of the shift, I hadn't heard anything yet. So I asked him what happened. And he said, a lady called in and said that you pulled her daughter and grandkids over and that you pulled the mom out at gunpoint, put her face down on the ground, and the kids were crying and distraught.
Wow.
None of this had happened.
That story grew, huh?
Wow. Let me tell you something. At that point, the public didn't know we had cameras. We had just gotten them.
Uh-huh.
So they were still telling stories. And the thing is, the lady, we couldn't even file anything on the lady that I pulled over because she's not the one that called and said it. The mother did, and she wasn't even there. So we don't know if the mother made it up or if the daughter told the mother that. But
I'm willing to bet the daughter told the mother that.
Yep. I would think so.
Well, let me tell you what the video showed. The video showed the two kids in the back seat while I'm in the vehicle running her plates and her license to see if everything's clear. You see the little kids on the video popping their head up and laughing and playing peekaboo on the video. And these are the kids that were distraught and crying, according to the grandmother.
Yeah, how about it?
So it was stuff like that right there that started bringing my way around. I was more in favor of the cameras. At first, we were dead set against it, but it turned out more often than not, it saved our butts than it ever got us in trouble. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Film don't lie.
Nope, it don't.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I can imagine that's a lifesaver.
Yeah, let me tell you this one. This is a pretty funny story. Me and this other officer, his name's Kerry, and he did say I had permission to use his name on the show, so that's why I'm using his name. We got sent, and we had worked all night. This was in the morning. It was like the last call. We got sent to this drunk high guy at an apartment complex. He was tearing up his own apartment. He got so blitzed, he was destroying his own everything, TV, lamps. He smashed out the picture window on his apartment complex. He was up on the second floor. It's like our last call. We were about to get off. The sun was coming up. So me and Kerry get sent over there. We get there. We see all the glass out on the sidewalk up on the second floor landing. And he's in there cussing and screaming. And we recognize the guy. It was a guy we'll call Turdley. That's not his real last name, but his real last name is very similar to that. You could probably figure out what it was, but we call him Turdley because he was a real turd. And he was always drunk or high. And based on the fact that I had worked we had worked off-duty security at the emergency room. We knew he had hepatitis A, B, and C.
Wow.
Who knows what else he had. So we didn't like dealing with this guy. Anytime it was him, I'd put on thick leather gloves because a lot of times he wanted to fight. And I was afraid I was going to cut my knuckle on his teeth and pick up one of his alphabet candy store diseases.
Right.
So we walk up, all the glasses out on the second floor landing on the concrete. And we said, we called him by his first name. We said, "What's going on?" He goes, "Nothing's going on." He goes, "Somebody broke in my house. I want to report a burglary." And we said, all the glass is on the outside. If someone broke in, wouldn't the glass be on the inside? "I'm telling you, I was burglarized." And he starts cussing us. We said, "Well, then come out here and talk to us." And he's like, "You think I'm stupid? You want me to go out there so you can arrest me? You want to get me for PI, don't you?" I said, "No, we want to take your report. We can't take your report from behind the closed door." He's like, "Nah." So he cusses us and stuff. So at this point, you know, we don't have a warrant to go in there. And he is in his private residence. And so we came up with this ruse that I had learned in training, by the way, a couple of years before that. And what we did is we went all the way to the far end of the landing. And we pretended to be looking at something on that was on the ground up there, but far away from his apartment. And we would look down, and we even kneeled down to look at it. And then we looked at each other and shook our heads. Well, this got his curiosity up. Now he's sticking his head out of the broken window and looking over at us. And he gets real curious and starts saying, "What are you sons of bitches looking at? What do y'all got there?" And of course, we're ignoring him, right? And the guy's drunk, probably high too, but definitely drunk. And he can't stand it. We hear him unlock the deadbolt. And here he comes. He's only wearing blue jeans. He's not even wearing a shirt, and he's barefooted. And he stumbles over there to come see what it is we're looking at. And then we cuff him for public intoxication. So we walk him downstairs. Oh, he was pissed. We walk him down the landing. We call for an ambulance because we need him, you know, breaking the windows and smashing stuff. He kind of cut up his hands. So we need him medically cleared so we can transport him to jail without having to take him to the emergency room, because that could take hours. So we would call an ambulance to come treat him real quick, get him medically cleared, and then we'd take him to the jail. Since we had worked all night and the sun was coming up, we had also asked dispatch to send us a fresh day shift officer to see if he'd come transport him for us so we could go home. So this guy, they sent, the ambulance comes out, they send this officer. He's one of those guys that's just kind of coasting towards retirement. He's kind of doesn't do much, so we'll just call him Rod. We'll nickname him Rod, okay? Rod, okay. Retired on duty.
Retired on duty. That's how I feel sometimes.
So Rod. Yeah. So Rod shows up, retired on duty. He's supposed to be fresh. He just came on. His eyes are all puffy. Looks like he just woke up. And the first thing he does is get out of the police car holding one of those little tiny styrofoam cups of coffee. Okay, that's mistake number one. Number one, it's against policy to have food or drink out on a call. And number two, officer safety common sense tells you, leave it in the car. You want your hands free. And you're supposed to be paying attention.
Right.
So the ambulance just showed up right before he did. And this guy was pissed off and belligerent. And the paramedics, you could tell they were pissed off that we'd called them out. They still had bedhead. And they wanted us to uncuff Turdley so they could treat his hand. And I said, "You see, he's angry and belligerent." They go, "Well, you want us to treat him, you better take it off or we're not treating him." I said, "Okay." right as this is happening, here comes Rod with his cup of coffee. And Carrie tells him, he goes, "Hey, Rod, you want to take him in for us so we can go home?" He's like, "Well, I don't have a charge." And Carrie goes, "Well, you got PI, public intoxication." Right then, Turdley looks over and spots him and goes, his name wasn't Rod, but he goes, "Hey, Rod, you son of a bitch." He goes, "You're just mad because I stole your old lady." And Rod wasn't mad. He was ignoring him. And Rod goes, "That's all right." He goes, "I was done with her anyway." "F you, you son of a bitch. I was done with her too." What the? I know. That's what me and Carrie are looking at each other like, what the hell is going on here? So at this point, Rod had already said he don't have a charge. He's holding his cup of coffee in the left hand. This is right when I uncuff Turdley. The paramedics are treating him. And then Rod reaches in his front right shirt pocket with his free hand and starts to pull out a cigarette. Right when this happens, Turdley lunges at him, punches him square in the mouth. I recuff Turdley real quick. Meanwhile, Rod drops his cigarette and he reaches down for his gun and he goes, "Why, you son of a bitch." He's reaching for his gun. Then he reaches up, touches the pepper spray. Then he reaches behind him and touches his ass baton and then back to the gun. It's like he didn't know which one to get. By this point, I've already recuffed Turdley. And then at that point, I'm glaring at the paramedics and they just look down. They didn't say nothing. And then Carrie looks over at Rod and goes, "Well, Rod, it looks like you got a charge now." Which his lip was bleeding. So we're driving back to the station. We put him in the back of Rod's car and let him deal with him. And he now had an assault charge he could file on him if he didn't want to do the PI. And so we're driving back to the station, and every red light we stop at, I look over, and Carrie's laughing so hard. He's got tears coming out. He's slapping the steering wheel. And we did this probably half the way back to the station. And then a few days later go by, and I'm coming into work as he's getting off, Rod. And he comes up and he goes, "I want to thank you for cuffing him when you did." He goes, "Because I had flashbacks to Vietnam." He goes, "I was about to kill that son of a bitch." Which that made me laugh hard because I remember his hand going from the gun to the pepper spray to the baton like he didn't know which one. And you know, the funny thing is, he never spilled a drop of that coffee in the left hand.
That's a man after my own heart.
Yeah, he got hit in the mouth and didn't spill a drop. And I asked him, I said, "Hey, Rod, what's this stuff he was saying about him stealing your old lady? I said, you didn't react. What's up with that? Was that true?" He's like, "Yeah." He goes, "Years ago, I hired him to install an alarm system at my house, and him and my old lady struck up an affair, and then she ran off with him."
Oh, yeah, said, yeah.
Dang. Hey, if you and this guy have a history, he's drunk and belligerent. A, I wouldn't have had the coffee. I would have been on alert. And B, I wouldn't have been reaching for cigarettes. But anyway, that was that story.
Wow. Wow. You go from a police call to a divorce court.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how'd we get here?
Between that story, between that story and the officer that couldn't get the directions right and kept on missing places, and he's driving by people that are waving their hands and stuff, it just gives me this feeling, this vibe. I just literally... this past week, I was listening, I forget what show I was listening to, it was a podcast, and they were talking to Jordan Peterson, who's a really well-known clinical psychologist, and they brought up the fact that he likes watching the TV show Trailer Park Boys on Netflix, and I was like, oh, I'd never heard of it, but sounds like my kind of style. I spent about, 10, 11, 12 years of my life in a trailer park. I was like, I probably could relate, because he said he could relate and stuff. That's why he thinks it's funny. And I started watching it the other day and stuff. And it's really just the essence of what it's like living in a trailer park. It's its own community. Yes. It's its own little world.
Yes.
It has its own rules and laws, and you know who runs the place and all that stuff. And these two officers you were just talking about will be perfect, like, trailer park supervisor material, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, I agree. Man.
That's funny. Here comes the security officers for the trailer park. Hello.
I used to be a police officer. You better watch out. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a suicidal guy one time. And you know what? If you want to look up the exact date this happened, I could tell you when it was, because it was on a Sunday. It was back in 94 in September. And I remember that the Cowboys were playing the Steelers that afternoon in September 94. And Kerry and I were looking forward. We're on day shift that time. We're looking forward to getting off and at least catching the second half of the game. Well, once again, we got a late call, and it was the suicidal subject at an apartment complex. And they said he was threatening to kill himself and kill his wife and kids. So we get there, and as soon as we step in, the wife lets us in. As soon as we get there, there he is sitting in the recliner, and he's holding this big meat cleaver in his hand, in his lap. So we find out what was going on. We get her and the kids out of the apartment, and we call for a sergeant to notify a supervisor what's going on. We asked her if she had somewhere she could go, like family or something. She did. So we got her and the kids out. He's in that chair. And he already had hesitation marks, what we call hesitation marks on him. And that's when a lot of times if some people are contemplating suicide, especially cutting, they'll have light cuts. He had light cuts across his forehead and face. It's kind of like they're trying to get the courage up to do it. So we call those hesitation marks. Once we had them out, now it's just me and Kerry and this guy. Well, then we knew he was suicidal. So he stands up and starts coming towards us. At this point, we draw down on him and we're telling him to drop it and stop. And he's coming right at us. And we know he wants to die. So he's doing suicide by cop.
Right.
You know, that's what he wants. And we don't want to do it. We don't want to kill him. But he's coming at us with the meat cleaver. And he's just walking. He's not running at us. He's walking. We're giving him commands. We're telling him to drop it and stop. And he won't. And, I mean, he got close. Too close. You know, in training, they tell you 21 feet is the minimum safe distance from someone that has a knife. He got within maybe 5 to 7 steps away from us, maybe. At the point he finally stopped is when we both started applying pressure to the trigger. We were aiming center mass at his chest. We were about to drop him. And I don't know if he saw that or what, but once we started applying pressure to the trigger, he stopped. And then he walked down the hall. Wouldn't drop the knife, all the way down the hall to a back bedroom that was all the way at the very end of the hall. He went in there, and me and Kerry both said, I almost shot him. He's like, yeah. Kerry goes, I had pressure on the trigger. I said, so did I. And next thing you know, here he comes again down the hall, coming right back at us with the meat cleaver. And we draw down, we're giving commands again. He does it a second time. He ends up getting so close again that we start putting pressure on the trigger, and he stops again, probably 7 feet away from us, maybe. It was enough he could see it. Then he ended up retreating back into the bedroom. At this point, our sergeant shows up, and we let him in. This guy was old school. He'd been around since the 60s or 70s, and this we're talking about 94. I was 22 at the time. Kerry was a couple years older. And this sergeant shows up. He was so old school. He was wearing that bus driver hat that we all hated wearing. He walked. Yeah. He that's how old school he is. He wore it. He showed up at the scene wearing that hat. We told him what all just happened and how we almost killed this guy. And he kind of looked at us kind of dismissive, like, ah, you dumb rookies. Y'all don't know what you're talking about. He asked what the guy's name was, and we told him. So he's like, oh, he's like, okay. And he just starts walking down the hall towards that room. He said, where's he at? We told him. We said, but don't go in there. We said, he's holding a meat cleaver. And I said, we've almost killed him twice. So he just ignores us, walks down the hall. He knocks on the door, opens it, and says, hi, Mr. So-and-so. I'm Sergeant. And before he could get the words out, he's like, ah, you son of a bitch. And he runs at him with that meat cleaver. Next thing you know, that sergeant slams that door shut, comes down the hall, walks right between both of us. As he walks between us and heads out the door, the last thing he said was, keep me posted, and he was gone.
Smart man. He knows when to get out.
Good luck, boys. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, so this was the guy that we tried to warn and dismissed us and thought he was going to go talk him down like we were stupid and didn't know what we were doing. So he takes off. We didn't know what was going on. He didn't tell us crap.
He probably just thought it was going to be a good learning experience for you guys and just wanted to pass it along.
Well, yeah. So eventually what happened, he had sent other units out there. The other officers cleared out all the other apartment buildings in that unit, got them out of the building. I guess he didn't want any rounds going through the wall and hitting someone else on accident. So I guess once he faced that guy, I guess he believed us that we almost killed him because the guy came at him with the meat cleaver. So he sent other officers to clear out the other units, and then he sent this other young rookie skinny officer up there with us. His nickname was Beavis because he looked just like Beavis from Beavis and Butthead. Now, I'm going to tell you something. We came up with a game plan that there's no way we should have done this. It is so dangerous. We shouldn't have done this. But we were young. We were invincible. We were going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Beavis come up there. We knew the guy had already seen me and Carrie, but he hadn't spotted Beavis yet. He just sent Beavis up there to help us. And so the plan we came up with, since he kept coming out of that room and coming towards us, we had Beavis go into another bedroom that was close to the one he was coming out of. And he didn't know Beavis was there because the two he kept coming towards were still by the front door. And sure enough, he came out a third time. And he sees us still by the front door, and he starts walking down the hall towards us. Well, he didn't know Beavis was in the house. So Beavis comes up behind him, jumps on his back, grabs that right hand with the meat cleaver. It's up in the air. At this point, me and Carrie bull rush him. We hit him so hard, we busted through that back bedroom door, ended up in that bedroom. And at this point, you got Beavis behind him, choking him out with one arm, holding the cleaver up in the hand with the other arm. I'm trying to wrestle the guy down. And then Carrie commences to go to town on this guy, starts punching him in the stomach and kneeing him in the nuts.
Jeez.
The guy goes, I mean, Carrie went to town on him. The guy goes, and it was like timber face down first. At this point, we disarmed him. We cuffed him. And you know what took him down was the knees to the nuts and the punches in the stomach.
That'll do
it. And then later Beavis is going, hey, did you guys see the way I choked him out? And so we go, yeah, Beavis, we saw how you choked him out. This was a little skinny dude. Now, I will give you this. He did hold him long enough for us to bum rush him and tackle him, but anyway, we come out, we drag this guy down the stairs and we're dragging him to our car. And we go out there and there's that sergeant had the hostage negotiators outside. He had an ambulance standing by. This whole time he was calling everybody, but we didn't know it. He called for the negotiators. He called for the ambulance. They had SWAT. They had everybody out there. And here we come dragging this guy out. Of course, that plan is so stupid. Looking back on it now with experience and maturity,
right.
I would never have any troops do that. That is so dangerous.
Yep.
the way we did it, it worked out, but it was so dangerous. We ended up dragging him into the car. Of course, we have to take him to the hospital to get him medically cleared. And we call the mental health people out. And dispatch tells us, well, they want to know if they really have to come out because they've got something else going on. And we said, we almost had to kill this guy. What's more important than them coming out to see this guy and tell him to meet us at the emergency room? So that's where we took him. So Carrie and I were over there with him, and the lady called us. She was actually the supervisor over the mental health. I guess she was the one on call that weekend. She calls us and says, is this something she really has to come out on? Because she's supposed to meet a realtor to look at a house. And we said, yeah. We said, yeah. I said, this guy was threatening to kill his family, and then we almost had to kill him. We said, yeah, you need to come out. So she comes out. She meets him at the ER, and then she goes, okay, I'm out of here. He's all yours. We said, what? What do you mean he's all ours? She goes, well, I talked to him, and I got him to sign a promissory note that he wouldn't hurt himself or anyone else. She goes, nothing else I could do, and then she leaves.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, this should be a TV show.
How about it?
So Carrie and I end up arresting him for family violence, and I put a hold on him because she didn't even do nothing. And by the time we left, the sun had gone down, and the Cowboys had whipped the Steelers.
Good.
And we didn't get to see it.
You missed the whole thing.
We didn't get to watch it.
Yep.
Yeah, well, this was back, but we didn't have DVR back then, you know? And
I remember,
and I didn't know
days.
How to program a VCR.
So on that note, though, looking at it, in that moment, were you more bummed that you didn't get to see the game, or were you more like, holy crap, we just went through that? You know what I mean? Because, like, I don't know, like, as the person receiving that story, I'm like, I'll just watch the highlights on the game. I'd rather be there and see this whole thing go down, you know?
I was, the truth is, even though I was pissed off that we missed the game, or he was pissed, and we were both pissed we missed the game. The truth is, this was a traumatic thing.
Sure.
That's the closest I've ever come to killing anyone. And we knew he wanted us to kill him, but we didn't want to kill him.
Sure.
And we went through all this, and then they weren't even willing to go get him some help.
Yeah,
and, you know, a lot of times most cops will tell you that the most dangerous kind of call you can go on is family violence, which it is. That is true. That is the most officer injuries come from family violence. Mm. And the reason being is because not always, but a lot of times when you go to arrest the guy, sometimes that woman will turn on you and jump your back.
Yep. I believe it.
And so that's actually the deadliest kind of call you can go on. But I didn't really worry about those too much when I was working. The ones I worried about the most were the mental subjects, because they're crazy. And if they do something to you, they're going to get away with it because they're just going to commit them or whatever. And then once they get back on their meds and they're deemed fine, they'll release them back out. And basically, you just got killed. And so the ones I always worried about was the mental subjects.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. Yeah.
Speaking of that, going back to Turdley real quick. One time I used to, on one of my days off, I used to work off duty security at the emergency room. We'd get there at 5 PM and leave at 6 AM. It was a 13-hour shift. And I walk in there one time and there's Turdley in the bed, and he's raising all kinds of cane. And he's cussing, and he's threatening to leave against medical advice. They call AMA, where you just get up and walk out. And I asked the nurse, the charge nurse, I said, do you want me to handcuff him to the bed? She's like, nah. She goes, he ain't going nowhere. She goes, just watch this. So he gets up. He's wearing that hospital gown that only covers the front of you. His whole back and ass is exposed. He gets up and decides he's going to march out the door. Well, he's got this pipe that's hanging between his legs, hanging out behind him. And as he gets closer to the door, the slack runs out on that pipe. And he goes, whoa, and he starts stumbling backwards. And then she goes, well, she called him by his first name. She said, get back in the bed. And he did. And I said, what is that? She said, it's called a catheter. And I had never.
I knew that was coming.
And now my.
That'll stop you in a hurry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had never heard of this catheter. And I was still a young guy, young rookie, early 20s. And I said, what's a catheter? And she goes, well, it's this pipe we stick inside his penis, and it's to be able to draw urine out of his bladder. And she said, and once it's in, we blow up a balloon on the end so it won't come out. And I said, I've never heard of that. He goes, yeah, I knew he wasn't going anywhere.
Nope.
He was right.
He is tied this to was that bed. Same,
oh. Yeah, this is that same curly guy.
Oh my word, that's hilarious. I just can imagine that face. You know, you can just see his eyes bulge. Yeah. Like, what?
Whoa, okay, that's a new feeling.
Yeah.
Oh.
You guys ought to try this one. You know, when I told you back when I told you that rookie guy would come in, he's a go-getter, turning his stack of stuff, and he was all happy.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's how I used to be when I first started. And y'all can use this at work, any of y'all out there listening to that. I would, back when I was brand new on the shift, I'd come in with my stack of stuff and turn it in at the end of the shift. Everybody's in there waiting to get their stuff approved by the sergeants. All the sergeants are in there checking reports and tickets. And after I'd put my stack down, I'd reach up from my right shoulder and start moving my arm in a rotation. And I'd go, ah. And it'd go, inevitably somebody would go, what's wrong? Did you hurt your arm? I go, no. I said, my shoulder hurts from carrying the shift.
You know, speaking of that, I got to tell you, this is hilarious because it just kind of it goes along. When Tony first started working for Pitt, Ohio, he was the exact same way.
Yep.
You know, and I was like, yeah, I would say to his mom, I'd go, you know, Michelle, just wait, give him a couple of years and that attitude will be gone. All of that excitement and enthusiasm. And I'm here to work. You know, here I am. I'm here. My boots are on. I'm ready to go. Give me the keys of the truck. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like I was at a point in my life where I finally, for the first time, felt like I landed in a job where I knew could carry me for the rest of my life.
Right.
And then on top of it, I was super excited about driving tractor trailer. And I also knew that the reason why I got the job was because Jason, my boss, called up to your boss to ask what kind of worker you were.
Right.
And because when in my interview, Jason told me that he already had somebody in mind that he offered the job to. And he asked if I'd be willing to work the dock until something else opened up. And I knew I wanted to be in Pitt, Ohio. So I said, yeah.
Right.
And then he called me the next day and said that he's going to offer me the job instead. And he pulled the offer from the other guy. So like, I was so excited to be there because I just felt like it was such a long shot that I would get in like that on the first try.
Right.
And I was full of energy. I would come in at 6 o'clock in the morning, just ready to rock. And I'd go until about 8 o'clock at night. I was like proud of myself. I was the first one punching in, last one punching out, all that stuff. And the guys at the terminal are like, wait, driver, they're going to wear you down. I'm like, nah, it's going to be great. I love this. And I remember we went to the house the one night for dinner and I left probably to use the bathroom. You told Lindsay the same thing.
Yep.
You're like, he's going to be a miserable son of a bitch one day. And you were right. Yeah. Like it took about 2 years and I was tapped out. I was like, this sucks. I was like, I'm done doing these 14-hour days.
Oh, yeah.
I'm skipping breaks just to get done as fast as I can. Like I am done with this crap.
That is life experience. It just tells you, you know. And I mean, you need to be that way when you first start. You know, when you like you know, rookie cops. You know, you first come in, you're all excited about doing your thing.
Yeah.
You need to be. You know, that's just the way it is. And you know, everybody else standing around is like looking at you like, yeah.
We've been there. It'll change.
Yeah. We've been there. Yeah, we've all done that.
Yeah, the guys saying that to me were there for like 30 some years, and I remember
they knew
Mikey P. Like he has this like raspy voice, and he's. I remember every morning I was walking in with him. He's just saying,
wait, driver, they're going to wear you down. Wait until they wear you down, driver. And I was like, oh, Mike, yeah, you're funny, buddy. Yeah, no, this is a great job. I'm absolutely happy. Let's go, you know. And I'd say the last year that I was there, we're walking in together and he's like, you're walking as slow as me now.
Yeah, buddy.
And, yeah. And like, I mean, my last couple years there, I was doing 9:30 start time, and I routinely, because see, Jason, so the one day I came into work and there's this one guy that he worked his butt off. Like he would drive truck all day. He'd come in, work the dock at night until he hit his 14 and then he'd go home every day. He was just boom, boom, boom. And I came in one day and he got fired. And I was like, whoa, why did he get fired? And the guys were saying that he was showing up late. And I talked to Jason and I was like, Jason, man, like, you know, he was a really, really good worker. I'm surprised that he got fired. And he's like, you know, we warned him several times, but he was showing up like a half hour late, things like that. Wow. You know, he was driving things from like North Philly and the traffic and stuff. And I said to him, so what's like the cushion here? I don't want to lose my job, you know, cause I was like probably 2 years into driving there. And he said, listen, basically if you show, you can punch in 5 minutes early or 5 minutes late with no problem. And I was like, all right, noted. And I noted that. Right. And so by the time I was wrapping my time up there and stuff, I mean, 9:30 start time, I'm punching at 9:34, 9:35, right on the dot. You know, like if I got there at 9:30, I'm sitting in my truck for a few minutes, just kind of getting my bearings straight. Right. And I'm booking it, trying to get my day done and stuff because I was like, I'm tapped out.
You just want to get done.
Wears you out, man. And you've been at it for 20 million years. And so it's
whew. Almost 30.
Well, there's some stories for everybody from me.
Yeah. I was the same way. I used to say I would do it for, I would stay longer past my shift and do it for free if they would let me when I first started.
Yeah.
And some of the guys go, are you crazy? They go, give it a year or 2 years. You won't think that. Sure enough,
they were right. Yes, sir. Yeah.
You know, but I imagine as a boss looking at somebody you hire that's doing that, you know, they're going to get worn down. You know that they're going to eventually, that's not going to be always the case. But at that point, you're going to have a solid worker, just not an over enthusiastic worker. You're still going to have a guy that gets his job done the way you'd like it. Mm-hmm. It's just with the enthusiasm and the expeditious nature of it will be lacking, you know, so
the excitement is gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, listen, tell me the pepper spray story, the pepper spray crowd.
Okay. All right. This happened back around, it was either in 2013 or 2014. At the time, I was the lieutenant over one of the patrol shifts. It was one of those Odessa weekends where it's call to call. Dispatch has calls holding, no officers to send. We were shorthanded and it's busy. You can't handle all the calls. They put out this, they said a major disturbance at one of the other Whataburgers in town, the one on Andrews Highway. And, it was so busy. They were sending one officer by himself with no backup and he was coming from all the way across town. So he was a long ways off. So I got in my car and went to back him up. And my car was an unmarked car. It was a solid white car at the time. And I ended up beating the officer there. And as I'm pulling up, as I'm coming, I was coming from the south part of town. And I see the main door to the business, and I see this big crowd there gathered. So I pull in behind on the other side of the parking lot, and I park on the far end by the road. I park my car there and get out where none of them could see me. So I get out, as I'm walking up to the main door, I'm assessing the situation, trying to figure out who's who and what's what. And as I'm walking up, I notice inside the restaurant is the manager. She was an African American lady. And there was two middle-aged white guys standing by her. And they were just standing still with her. And she's telling them, y'all get out of here. I've already called the cops. And outside the door is this crowd of 20 to 25 little Hispanic thugs And some of them are holding both of the doors to the restaurant open. And part of the crowd's cussing them. They're taunting them. And then you had two main punks in the middle. They were acting like they were going to punch those guys and kind of jumping at them and jumping back. The whole time this manager lady's telling them to leave. She's already called the cops. Everyone is so locked in on each other that they've got that tunnel vision going to where the two white guys, customers inside and that manager lady, their eyes don't see me. I'm walking up behind all of them. The crowd doesn't see me because they're too busy taunting those people. And what I did is I pulled my pepper spray out. I shook the can good, make sure it's nice and mixed. And our can was the fogger kind. And once I figured out who the instigators were, I sprayed all 20 or 25 of them. I mean, I painted them orange.
Wow.
They scattered like roaches. The manager lady starts going, yeah, MFers, take that. So this crowd disperses, right? I mean, they're gone. They run. They're out of there. And I go in there and I said, are you okay, ma'am? Was anybody in here assaulted? And she's like, no, we're fine. Those guys, they say we're fine. Of course, they're kind of coughing too, but they caught a little bit of went in there, but they weren't hit with the main part. That crowd was, though. I painted that crowd orange. And then the funny part is once they said they were okay and they didn't need anything else, I went back around the other side because I didn't know where everybody went. I mean, this was a large crowd. They scattered. They were gone. And I walk around back, and on the other side of the restaurant where the back door is at, across the parking lot, there was one of the main instigators. And he's over there, and he's trying to wipe his eyes and face with his T-shirt, and he's over there coughing. He's got big old long stringer snot hanging out of his nose.
Wow.
And at this point, I could walk up behind him and handcuff him, and he's mine, right? But we're super busy. We don't have enough people to handle all the calls as it is. This is going to tie up someone to transport because my car didn't have a transport. It didn't even have a cage in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is, while he's sitting there cleaning his face off with his T-shirt, I got within probably 15 feet of him, and I go, hey, you! And he turns around and looks at me, and it's like, oh, shit. And he takes off running for the alley, full speed. And I turn around and go get back in my car and go back in service. He ran down the alley, and I didn't even bother chasing him, because the truth is, if I wanted him, I could have had him. I didn't have to alert him.
Yeah.
I didn't want to tie someone up. So anyway, before that officer could get there, the one I was backing up, I get on there and tell headquarters, I'm 10-8, number two. 10-8 means back in service, and number two means advised assistant. Which anytime we use any kind of force, any kind whatsoever, we have to fill out this thing called a use of force report. Whether it's your gun, your pepper spray, your baton, or even if you punch somebody, you have to do your use of force. Well, I didn't do a use of force report. So at the end of the shift, I get back to the shift. The officers come in and they go, that was awesome. I had told dispatch I sprayed that crowd. Anyway, the officers come in and they were laughing. They said, man, that was awesome. We've never heard of anybody spray anybody and then go back in service and say advise the assistant. And the sergeant goes, don't start getting any ideas from the lieutenant. And I said, there wasn't anybody left to take the use of force report from. Because when you do the use of force report, you interview the person that the force was used on. But there was no person. They were all gone.
They all ran.
Hence why, yeah. I said, hey, you, and then he starts running.
Get rid of it.
Yeah, that's the one I could have gotten. He was one of the two main instigators that was trying to pretend like he's going to hit him. I could have got him, but that's why I said, hey, you, come here. And boom, he did exactly what I thought he was going to do. He took off running down the alley.
Less paperwork. Sounds good.
Oh, it was less paperwork. Disturbance was over. The manager was happy. And
What caused the disturbance? Do you remember?
Well, they said that those punks had been in there, and I don't know if they were starting stuff with those two middle-aged white guys that were in there. And now, as far as what actually instigated it, I don't know. But the manager did say they were in here starting stuff with my customers. And so I asked them to leave, and then they started cussing us out and bowing up to us and wanting to fight my customers. So that's when I called y'all, and I guess they managed to get them far enough out the door, but they were all gathered around the door. And you know, the funny thing is I walked right up on them and none of them ever saw me. They were locked in on each other.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? That's how people are. They get so distracted or absorbed into something, you know, that they don't see anything coming around.
Yeah. Wow. Well, listen, Pete.
No, wait.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, go ahead.
Okay. There's just one more story that I wanted to hear because I thought this was really good.
Yep.
It just looked really good. If it's okay. The secret to being a great leader.
That's what I was going to ask him to end on.
Very good. Okay. That was where I was going. That would be a great ending.
If he was going to bring that up sooner, I was going to tell him to hold it till the end because I thought that'd be a great way to end the conversation. So go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I ended up being a lieutenant, the guys on my shift, they loved working for me. I even had officers from other shifts would come into my office just to shoot the crap. And where I learned this was as I was coming up through the ranks, I had some really good supervisors, some good sergeants and good lieutenants. And then I had some that weren't that great. And I always told myself, if I'm ever in that position, I want to be like him. And so I think three things boil down to it. And you know, if anybody new came to my shift, I would always have a talk with them to let them know what my expectations were. And the number one expectation I had was treat everyone like you would want your mom or dad or brother or sister treated. Don't just be a jerk to them just because you can. I said, if they're just you, even if you pull them over, I said, treat them the way you'd want your family treated if they got pulled over. And the key, I think, is number one, the golden rule. Just treat other people the way you want to be treated. The best supervisors I had did that. The other thing is, don't ask anyone to do anything that you're not willing to do yourself. And I first learned that in elementary from a book report. I'd been out sick, I guess, and I got back and we were supposed to do a book report. All the good names were taken, but there was only about 7 to 10 names left. I didn't recognize any of the names. This was in elementary, so I just picked a name at random and I did a book report on him. Well, it turned out the guy was Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox, the German tank general from World War II. And one of the things that stuck out from that book was, back when they were building bridges to get the tanks across, he would jump down in the cold, muddy water with the troops to help build that bridge. And as an elementary kid, I always remembered that because the reason his troops loved him is because he never asked them to do anything that he wasn't willing to get down and dirty and do with them. So that was another key. And then the third one was, don't forget where you come from. And by that, you know, me and my two younger brothers, we didn't have a lot growing up. So part of it is remembering we came up, you know, poor West Texas Mexican kids. We didn't have a lot. Don't forget that. But don't forget you were a rookie patrolman. Don't forget you were a patrolman. Just because now you have rank, don't get the big head. And I know up hearing you guys, especially Tony, talk about there was times y'all didn't have a lot. And, you know, that really hit home with me because we went through a lot of hardships, but hardship does not equal victimhood.
Amen.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know what I mean? If you can't make it in this country, you can't make it anywhere.
Yep, exactly.
So that's what I thought was the key to being a good leader. And I will say one other thing that doesn't have anything to do with leadership, but I just want to make sure I got this in there, is that I want to tell everyone listening to whatever you do, do not give up your Second Amendment rights. because without those Second Amendment rights, the rest of the rights don't mean anything. That's our teeth.
Yes.
And when seconds count, the cops are only minutes away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree.
And as far as the to all my brothers and sisters out there that wear blue, don't forget that oath of office we took. It was to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And so when you get that means you don't owe an allegiance to your bosses or any politician. If you get a mandate or an executive order and it conflicts with that Constitution, your oath is to that Constitution, to people's rights. Our founding fathers said that we have certain inalienable rights that are endowed by our Creator. And that means our rights come from God, not from the government. And they said the rights are unalienable, which means we cannot be separated from those rights.
That's right.
So I appreciate you guys. It's been an honor and a pleasure talking to y'all. Or use guys.
Use guys.
I say y'all.
Yep. Yeah.
Either way works, you know.
I appreciate everything you said about leadership and what you just said about the Second Amendment. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment myself. I got to be with the monsters that I hunt in about a week. So, but,
right.
Amen.
Yeah, I would tell you, man, like the quote of this episode is hardship doesn't equal victimhood. I freaking love it. And it's true. It's true. I mean, cause I've seen it in my own life and not just in my childhood, but even in my adult life when life was hard and, you know, I mean, it was easy. And I think I even mentally did turn a corner where I took a victim perception for a little bit and you snap out of it and you're just like, just because it's hard doesn't mean I need to act like a victim. And I, exactly. And you know what the thing is, when you become honest with yourself and you get down to the root of it, you're truly honest with yourself, you say to yourself, you know, my life sucks right now. It's extremely hard. I don't know how it's going to get better. All I know is nobody in this world is ever gonna or ever can make my life better except for me. And so even if it's, right. if it's a situation where I'm not, it's not necessarily my fault. It's just hard. And you have no idea how you're going to get out of that hardship. The only person in the world that's qualified, that will and can help you in that situation is yourself. And so refusing to see yourself as a victim and push through and start on a daily basis being introspective and looking at yourself and trying to figure out what can I do? Is it becoming a truck driver? Is it becoming a podcaster? Is it whatever it is? It's pursuing your life and with the ambition to only be the sole reason for your life turnaround. Like so many people, I think, even if they don't think of it consciously, subconsciously, they're just waiting for that person, that group of people to show up at their door with a $400,000 check and say, guess what? You're getting $400,000. Oh, wow. Why? Because it's your lucky day. It doesn't happen.
Right.
It doesn't happen. You have to do it yourself. Yep. And you don't know how to do it. Yep. Because you're in the middle of the hardship. You're like, I don't understand how it's going to happen. But you start doing little pieces at a time, like a puzzle. You get two pieces that fit together. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is a corner of a puzzle. I can build from here. And you just start building day after day, hour by hour, until you finally have a complete picture of a life that you never could have imagined 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. See, you got me ranting now. So
that's, yeah,
that's good. But I just, that's the way I looked at my life. And you know, I anything from the poor choices I made with college to getting married too soon and that leading to financial hardships to even my childhood and how rough my neighborhood was. And because of how rough the neighborhood was, how that led to me not understanding that I like not having the maturity level to still push through the social anxieties to become a good academic student, you know? And so like there's so many things that I just blamed, you know, my past on my life. My life just turned out this way. My life sucks and stuff. And eventually that gets freaking old. Mm-hmm. That gets freaking old.
Yep.
And so you're limited. You're down to very limited options as to what to do. Are we going to kill ourselves? Are we going to start doing drugs? Are we going to start drinking heavy? Or are we just going to freaking buckle up every day, take a puzzle piece and try figuring out where it goes in the puzzle?
Right.
And that, remember, that's just the way it is.
Yep.
And so there's Tony's motivational speaker.
Yep. Well, so, you know, the thing is,
Dad, you're next.
A lot of people start out life in a very difficult time, a very difficult situation. You know, I don't ever talk about what, you know, my life was like as a kid, you know, but it was no, you know, we wanted for everything.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's just the way it was. And you don't think about it, you know, and you can't, it's like, you, like both of you have said, you can't make yourself a victim because that will leave you vulnerable all the time.
Yeah.
Because then you're always a victim. And, you know, you can choose to make the difference and you have to just do it. You know, you've got to buckle up,
right,
put on the big pants and start doing the hard work. And if you're consistently doing the hard work, things will work out. Things will you know,
yeah,
you're willing to take the steps.
But and here's the thing, like,
you got to be willing to do it.
That's exactly it. And in those moments, you will ask yourself, you will question yourself, be like, all this hard work I'm doing, and I still don't know if I'm guaranteed this is going to be payoff. I don't know if this is actually going to pay off. And
there's
in those,
no guarantees.
There is no guarantee. In those moments, you just say to yourself, there is no guarantee.
No.
But the only guarantee I can give you is that it won't work out for you if you don't try.
Right. If you don't do it.
You never know if things are going to work
you're
out for you.
Guaranteed for failure.
Ever.
Yeah.
But you will guaranteed it won't work out,
yep,
if you don't freaking try with your life.
That's it. That's it. You have to at least put in the effort.
And only you can do it.
Yep. You cannot. Life is not something that you cannot put effort into or not show up for the game.
Yep.
You're either here or you're not in it at all. And then life is a failure.
Yep.
So, Pete.
It's been great talking to you.
It has been awesome. It was great. Your stories were fantastic. The things that you talked about were fantastic. And the way you ended it, I thought it was really cool. I really do. Because I think it's a positive note to end on, to give people something to look forward to.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I enjoyed it. And the last thing I got to say is, God says he'll curse you for 4 generations, but bless you for 1,000 generations. So God bless you guys all the way up from Brian at the top, all the way down to Ben and Gemma and the 997 Merkles to come.
Oh, geez.
Did Tony know that?
Let's just make sure it's a lineage that I don't ever meet, because
I'll forget their names.
They won't even know. They won't even know I existed. They're like,
no, they'll know.
They'll say, "What's a podcast?"
Yeah, who knows what things will be in the future?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Just download it to your brain.
Yeah, Pete, it's been a pleasure, buddy. Yep.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was fun. Thank you, guys.
Oh, it was really a pleasure. It was our pleasure. It really was.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, share the show. Right, Pops?
You got that right. Just share it.
We don't care where or how you share the show. Just share the show on social media, text message, word of mouth. A lot of people at Pitt, Ohio, shout out to Pitt, Ohio, listening to the show. And we're going to be having some more Pitt, Ohio drivers come in studio to chat with us. Some fellow drivers that me and my dad know. More my dad than me. A lot of the guys from your terminal are coming in.
Yep. They've been really excited about it. I think it's really cool.
But it's all about word of mouth. And now we got several terminals of Pitt, Ohio listening. Some guys in the Cherry Hill terminal are listening.
Yes,
shout out to Cherry Hill. And all the other drivers out there, please keep sharing the show, because we're just putting this show on for the people out there driving, needing to have something to take their mind off of, but also relate with. And that's where Hammer Lane Legends comes in. So thank you very much for sharing the show, friends. And until next week, keep the hammer down.
In the hammer lane.
Mrowm.